Hello, everybody. You're listening to and watching Wake Up with Patty Catter. I'm Patty Catter, and I have Bill Strabansky with me today. Again, Bill. Hi.
Why, hello. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you. It seems like ages since we last chatted.
It does. Boy, time flies.
So if you didn't catch the show last week, you guys, you want to go back and listen to Bill's story. He talks about his upbringing in Sarasota, Florida, and how he ended up joining the military, the Marine Corps to be specific, and became an advocate in Sarasota with an organization, SRQ Vets. And now we're going to actually talk about something really, not that SRQ Vets is not impactful, because it definitely is, but he decided to even step it up further, and he became an attorney who helps military veterans, right?
Yes, ma'am, I did. It was interesting. So when I was doing my undergraduate degree at USF in history, naturally you're trying to figure out who you are, what you want to do with life, et cetera. I applied for VA claims, for VA benefits, for a nasty crash that I had suffered overseas in Iraq. And I got out in July of 2007. I applied. There's a little bit more of a backstory of how me being lost in the sauce and kind of diddy bopping around a VA medical facility looking for college, which is a funnier story. But a VSO kind of plucked me around, plucked me out of the crowd and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "I want to go to college." And he goes, "You're in the wrong building, but have you ever heard of VA claims?" And I'm like, "I don't even know what you're talking about." He goes, "Come here, talk to me." And so I told him my story about what had happened to us overseas. And he says, "Let's file claims for your injuries from that crash." And I said, "Okay." Within less than a month, maybe a little bit plus or minus, within a month later, I got a denial back stating that I had no in-service event, injury, or disease, which is element one of a VA claim that occurred in service. And I was going, wait a second, this happened in December of 06, and we're now in August of 07, and you're telling me that the thing that happened had never happened. So it kind of took me downhill. And I got upset, pretty much like 9 out of 10 veterans do. They go, "How are you going to tell me that what I served didn't happen?" And instead of getting terribly upset, and falling too deep into a bottle of whiskey, I decided to understand this animal called the VA. And so I researched it. I found some beautiful things. It was created in the 1860s by Abe Lincoln. "For those who have borne to battle and their widow and their orphan." It's one of the most incredible quotes that you can read by him. And it's a very powerful, beautiful regulation. It is woefully misapplied. It is the people in the department are strikingly incompetent, almost to a point of confusion. And it requires strong advocacy, so much that around, I think it was the 1980s, that the courts started looking at this going, "We need to open this up to attorneys. We need to open this up to proper advocacy." So going back to undergrad, I started talking to a lot of veterans, and I started hearing and gathering horror stories about these VA claims. So I shifted. I went to law school with a purpose of advocacy for writing and advocacy within the court so that I could hone my skills as an attorney. And then also I studied VA claims. I graduated from law school and I moved back down to the 12th Judicial Circuit, which is Sarasota, Manatee, and DeSoto counties in Florida. And I picked up my first job as a prosecutor in the 12th Judicial Circuit. And I had the privilege to be given the honor by our elected official then to help create the first Veterans Treatment Court in the 12th Judicial Circuit in Manatee County. It still operates today. And then it was successful. And we used some of the resources, the community resources through SRQ Vets to help support it. Because naturally, a judicial system should not be able to solve this on its own. It must be a community effort. So a lot of the communities, the DAVs, the American Legions, the VFWs, the retired military veterans and other individuals who wanted to see the best for our veterans get out of the judicial system and become productive members of society stepped up, and they became very supportive pillars through our community, offering mentorship, offering employment, offering just a listening ear or a shoulder to cry on. It was beautiful. It then was successful in Manatee County, and then it went to Sarasota County. I finished my time as a prosecutor in Sarasota County, and I remember still being given the honor by that office to be the acting liaison, if you will, of the state attorney's office. The only issue was because I was a prosecutor, I am by laws of ethics and professionalism, I'm prohibited to speak to these veterans because they're defendants. I must speak through their advocate. And there was times when I realized that the advocate was a civilian and didn't quite see between the lines of what was going on. Or there were times where maybe this veteran just needed a good old fashioned knife hand and some motivation, and they could have pulled themselves out of that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. So with great regret, because being a prosecutor, especially working for the circuit at that time and being led by those individuals was an incredible job. And we were able to really, really help some of the victims and advocate for them within the judicial circuit. I resigned my position and I left to become an accredited VA attorney, so that I could begin representing veterans and their families. And that was an incredible adventure. And so I got accredited around December 7, 2018, I believe, and dove headfirst into the VA world. And I can tell you that my initial frustrations came out tenfold. I mean, we're having conferences where I'm on the phone with these people, like, how can you write this? How did you miss this piece of evidence? It's on their DD-214. Did you even look at this military personnel record, the record of service or the assignments of service or whatever? Like, I was baffled. And then I realized that the people in the VA are overly defensive. Mm-hmm. I think that they take a incorrect and I would even say misplaced or illegal adversarial approach to these claims. It's supposed to be a paternalistic regulation that's supposed to process these claims to their optimum. But instead, they kind of get this ego chip on their shoulder, you know, like, well, I'm a veteran too. And I'm like, well, good, then you should be doing push-ups for the crap that you just wrote. And they tend to kind of want to throw it back in your face. Now, that's not everybody. So for any of those who are decision review officers, VSRs, processing personnel, directors or assistant directors, I can tell you that in my experience of doing this since 2018 is I have met more angels than demons in the VA. I can tell you that the processes of the VA has handcuffed or strapped the angels with bureaucracy that is just maddening and nauseating. And my job is to continue to navigate these tumultuous waters of the VA and to press these claims for veterans and to make sure that when we get a decision letter, something is appropriately timely and that has a good faith argument that makes sense to file so that we can defeat the wheels of bureaucracy and to continuously press for inquiries and updates within regional offices so that these claims don't slip through the cracks and fall within what I call the black hole of death, which is called the national work queue. It's basically a bucket where claims go and their people are supposed to pull them out according to their suspense dates. Mm-hmm. So that was a long answer.
No, that was a good answer. So if you're listening to the show and you know me, you know that I've been a huge military advocate since 2007. And some of you may or may not know that in around 2009, I was heavily involved in pushing and advocating for the VA to implement a caregiver program. So we had to go through all this policy making and all of this fun stuff to actually implement that. But for me, the frustration has been over the years, the same thing that Bill has mentioned is, you know, you have these really great people in the VA, and then you also have some that are not doing their job. And there have been so many times over the years, even with Ken's military records or I shouldn't say military records, his personal records at the VA, his health records at the VA, people will ask us questions about his health. And I'm like, didn't you look at his chart? Didn't you look at his medical record? It's all in there. Like, why are you asking me these questions every single time we come here? You're asking these questions. So a lot of the frustration with me is, you know, having to repeat myself, having to advocate because I go to the civilian doctors with Ken and it's a cakewalk compared to the VA. Sometimes I'm just like, is the VA testing me today? But imagine being a military veteran who has physical injuries, mental wounds of war, and other injuries that impact the mental health that they have. Just like the system, when you call the VA and you get, you know, push one for this, two for this, and nobody knows who's calling, what number. So imagine having a veteran who has the deficiencies that maybe I wouldn't have, somebody who does not have a brain injury, and then mix that into the whole barrel. So advocates are so important. Attorneys are so important. Now, tell my listeners a little bit about why an attorney versus a normal advocate. And when should you get an attorney versus just having an advocate?
So that's a really good question. It's anybody in this day and age can get a degree. Anybody can not have a degree and still offer the level of competence that those who do and that are good at their job. I think that when it comes to VA claims, the point of consideration would be when it is you feel that you have hit a brick wall, when you keep hearing the same denials, when you submit new and relevant evidence on a supplemental form and they say no new and relevant evidence has been submitted, when you feel like getting a hold of your advocate, whoever that may be, either you're doing it by yourself, you're doing it through a veteran service officer, a VSO, or you're doing it through another attorney advocate, that it becomes frustrated. When you get to the point of emotional breakdown and giving up is when you want to seek an advocate that is definitely worth their salt. Now, typically the way that I describe the types of advocates out there are, I typically see on a very general sense that there's three. There's individuals who file for themselves, and there's a very low percentage who are capable of doing it and know how to do it and also have the creativity, the patience, and the persistence to pursue to the end. You have VSOs, God bless their souls. God bless them. God bless them. God bless them. They were part of the enacting of this regulations to begin with, and they were designed to assist veterans, but to assist them in things of simple filings, because the VA is designed to be paternalistic and to process these claims to the highest benefit already without being an adversary. The problem with VSOs is they come and go. And I think sometimes that there is a large population of them, and I'm going to be as bold to say it this way, is that they get lazy. They get lazy and they tell veterans, and a lot of you may resonate with this, oh, here's the paperwork, just fill it out and then send it in. Or they call and they say, hey, well, my claim got denied. We're like, oh, well, let's just check this out, or fill out this paperwork, or we need this piece of evidence and then send it in. Or what they do even worse is instead of using the Appeals Modernization Act with the new avenues of a supplemental claim or a high level review, as soon as they get denied, they push it to a Board of Veterans Appeals lane, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be proven many years down the road when the date and time for a hearing gets given to you. But instead, it could be remanded back to go for further development that a supplemental claim could have done in 6 to 7 or maybe 7 to 9 months anyways. So you're losing time and saving time. And then you have attorneys. Now, attorneys, just like engineers, just like doctors, just like other professionals with graduate degrees, you have to go shop and interview. You as the veteran and as the client need to go sit down and talk to these individuals and feel them out. You have felt out bad lieutenants before. You have felt out bad sergeants before. You need to sit down with these individuals. You need to ask them the tough questions, even the questions of urban legend within the VA. Oh, well, if I do this, they're going to take my gun rights away. Or if I do that, then, you know, they might Baker Act me, etc. Ask those tough questions. See what their responses are. Feel the human that is about to represent you for a lifetime benefit for something that you were willing to give your life for. So I think is it wise to have someone who is professional and who focuses on a particular trade? Yes. You know, there's the saying, a jack of all trades, a master of none. Well, you want to find the master of that one. And you want to interview them, and you want to, you know, hold them to a higher standard of accountability, because that's who we are. We're veterans. I mean, we gave them this blanket of freedom. Gosh darn it. Let's remind people who wove that blanket of freedom. So I think that yes, you when you find yourself kind of circling around and around and around again and getting nowhere with the VA, I think it's time for you to reach a higher level of competence.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's a question for you. I hear a lot. I have had advocates say, I can't help a military veteran file a claim if there's zero evidence in their military claim that they hurt their ankle while they were in service. And so afterwards, now they want to get a claim for their ankle. How true is that or not true?
So that's a really awesome question. So the beauty about the VA is, the Department of Defense first. We'll get to the Department of the VA in a minute. This would be my personal belief and understanding. Department of Defense, there's your military. Keep the bad guys outside of our borders, foreign and domestic. Keep our loved ones safe. And whatever it takes to do that and get it accomplished, let's get it done. A lot of times when you go into the military, if not pretty much every single time, there is this idea of being the strongest link within the chain. Nobody wants to go for a sprained ankle to medical because they don't want to be seen as a malingerer or, you know, a weak human being or, you know, whatever negative connotation we want to apply to that individual. There's that pride there, that military pride. So they suck it up. And, you know, maybe like in the Marines, they send us to our doc and their doc says, stretch, change your socks, drink water. Here's 800 milligrams of Motrin, which, by the way, is probably going to give you a stomach issue later on. You go back to your unit. You don't report it to medical. It just kind of disappears. It's gone. Oh, man, I got a little ringing going. What happens is you get out and you apply for the VA and they deny you a letter and they say, hey, we don't have any evidence in your military personnel file or your service treatment records that indicates that you had an injury, event, or disease in service. So therefore your claim is denied. The beautiful part is the legislature gave us the ability to tell our own stories because the Department of Defense is not the National Archives and their job is not to record. You don't have a scribe running around behind PFC Smith and Lance Corporal Jones saying, oh, Lance Corporal Jones went to the left. PFC Smith went to the right. PFC Smith fell down a hill and hurt his ankle, but he didn't report it to medical. So we're just going to go ahead and record it for him. That doesn't happen. What the VA is governed by is the United States Code that grants authority to the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 38, and the statutes, Title 38, Code of Federal Regulations, 3.159, subsection A1 and A2. It talks about competent medical evidence and competent lay evidence. Competent lay evidence, in a nutshell, is the evidence that if you have personal knowledge of, you're competent to testify about. So the reality is you're allowed to tell your story. I mean, in a nutshell is, you have the right to tell your story. You have a right to explain what happened to your injuries. You have a right to discuss the onset and the history of your injuries. And the VA must make a credibility determination. Part 5 of the M21 Adjudication Manual, Principles of Weighing and Evaluating Evidence, they must make a credibility determination. And if what you're saying happened to you while you were with your infantry unit and your DD-214 and your military personnel records suggest that you were in an infantry unit because it says that you were a grunt, and then it shows that you deployed to a certain area of theater of the world, and that's where it is that you got hurt, then it sounds like your story is credible and they must make a credibility determination. So what I tell veterans is I go, you have a right to tell your story. I don't have that right. Miss Patty doesn't have that right. And the VA sure as hell doesn't have that right because it's your story. Just like you don't have the right to tell mine. And the VA's job is to look at us and go, is this credible or not? And if it's credible, then they shall accept it as fact.
That's interesting. I remember when Ken was going through his med board process and there was a first sergeant, I think it was. I'm not going to say his name on air because I think he has different feelings now today than back then. But he had mentioned to a lot of the soldiers, so what, you're having headaches, so what, you feel depressed, we all do, like, you're not going to go get medical treatment or you're getting out and you're going to WTV unit. But I still am in contact today with some of the guys who they'll call me up and, Patty, how do I get my VA rating? I didn't get anything in writing because I hurry up and I ETS right out of that unit. So this is really good information. I don't know that all veterans understand that or know that. And even me, I've feel like I was a little misled too, because I thought that it had to be in black and white in your record.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes even in your records, they'll do things like someone will come in with symptomology of sinusitis or bronchitis or rhinitis or some type of ear, nose, throat issue. And the whoever's at medical at the time will use a very simple term, URI, upper respiratory infection. So it doesn't really define what it is. But if you look at the symptoms, you're going, wait a second, those symptoms clearly match what this diagnosis is. So does that mean this is an onset in service? And the answer is you have a very strong argument to say, yes, there's an onset in service. So what happens is you have a lot of misdiagnoses, underdiagnoses, or just no records at all. And that's the beauty about it. The other part too is, what if you are overseas? I mean, I can tell you that the accident that I was in overseas, I know the hospital that I went to. I know that I got medevaced. I know that I got stitched up, and I know that I left that hospital and went back to my unit. I couldn't even fathom where those records are. Mm-hmm. Couldn't even mention it. I know they gave me a little slip, and I know they called me by my name and they butchered my last name. I know that they were writing something on those charts because they had to pass it on to the next person who was going to the next shift. Couldn't even tell you where those records are.
Oh, I definitely believe that. So there's a fun story about Ken. I kept every shred of anything because before Ken was in the Army, I liked to journal and all this stuff. I kept everything, right, when it came to paperwork. But besides that, Ken, he was a police officer and he kept evidence on things. So long story short, he was going to these doctor's appointments and they literally lost his paperwork like three different times, but every time I'm like, it's okay, I have it right here, and I'd whip it out.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a very important thing to let me take a step back, because I also wanted to jump off one thing you were saying earlier. It's very important, one, to record and to try to find a way to keep a record. Otherwise you're going to have to reconstruct it, and the VA is going to say no, until all of a sudden one day maybe they stop saying no. But the other part too is, we're veterans. We were in the military. Our job is to be the most incredible war dogs that this human world has ever seen. And it needs to remain that way. There's nothing wrong with going in and going like, all right, I signed that dotted line. I'm ready to give it my all, including the youth of my back and my knees and my shoulders, to make sure that this beautiful, that I can go back and get a cheeseburger and a strawberry milkshake. And I can go back and I can kiss my loved ones. I can go back and play with my kids. There's nothing wrong with that. But we have to remember that there's going to come a time when the body is going to break down. And the chances are is that you had an acute injury that had its onset in service. And once something breaks, there's no fountain of youth. There's no magical stem cell research that's just going to make it all go away and you're going to turn back to being 21 again. At least maybe not yet. But those things should be addressed appropriately. And that is where the VA makes the mistake, is I don't believe that they routinely, to the benefit of the veteran, address them appropriately.
You know, one of the biggest problems that some of the veterans are having too is, for instance, I see all the time where with caregiver, I don't know how much you know about the caregiver program, all that stuff, but with them, you know, they keep having these reevaluations every single year with veterans who are 100% permanent total. And the thing that they don't understand is these veterans are actually getting older every single year, and they're having more issues every single year. It's not something that's just like vanished and gone. And, you know, with the stipend specific or the caregivers program specific, it's a little bit different and harsher and harder to get into. So for those annual evaluations, it's a mess. And I think it also makes our veterans feel bad when you guys go in for your annual appointment. You're like, oh, buddy, you feeling better this year? Like, okay, I didn't get another year older and things were breaking and falling apart more this year than last year.
Yeah. So talking about the examinations, I did bring with me a couple interesting points that I wanted to make. So what I've been doing is what I believe is the best way to effectively advocate and work in a system is to understand it. You have to be able to understand what was the intent of it being created to begin with. What's the purpose of it from beginning to end, basically filing to a grant or filing to a decision letter, whether it's a grant or a denial, and all the processes in between. The biggest part that used to frustrate me was these examinations, CMP examinations, re-examinations, submitting your own medical opinions, and then the VA giving absolutely no probative value or credibility to it. That evidence is so important to grants or denials. I mean, it's basically the entire case that I had to figure out what the heck was going on with it. So I did what I thought was important, and I went to this little place called the Office of Inspector General, and I started looking at the reports. And what I started finding was, I was shocked at what I found. The first report that I found came from September last year, September 7th, 2022. So it's a year old. This report specifically says that, and I'll read the title, the Veteran Benefits Administration could improve the accuracy and completeness of medical opinion requests for veteran disability benefits claims. This report, in a general aspect, talks about what happens to your claim the moment you file an application for benefits. It goes to claims processing. One of the most powerful statements that I found was within the first two pages, and it says that based on a statistical sample review of 100 medical opinion requests, the review team estimated that 27,900 of 41,100 requests, 68%, did not follow required procedures during the review period that they had taken the sample from. So that told me, it says, okay, so this is in a nutshell saying that around 60, you have a 68% chance at the moment you file an application, whoop, it's going to be somewhere mishandled, which means you've got a 32% chance that it's probably going to be handled correctly. Now, the VA is going to, excuse me, not the VA, the Office of Inspector General is going to preface these things with some paragraphs that saying, hey, this is a sample amount. You know, it might not be reflective of the whole amount. So, you know, I guess kind of take it with tongue in cheek, if you will. And I would agree with that, except for I kept digging and I found that there was a very interesting growth of these bad percentages, these inaccuracies. So I found another one that talks about re-examinations, which we were kind of touching on a little bit earlier. And in July 17 of 2018, unwarranted re-examinations for disability benefits. This is an Office of Inspector General report. They found that based on a sample, the review team estimated that employees requested unwarranted re-examinations in the review period for around 37% of cases. And I went, okay, 37%, not bad. That's cool. But that's in 2018. So then I kept digging and I says, okay, well, let's see what's going on. Well, in March 16 of 2023, this year, another inspection report came out that said veterans are still being required to attend unwarranted medical reexaminations for disability benefits. So I went, wow, they did a follow-up. This is awesome. I really like the Inspector General's office. Thank you for using taxpayers' dollars appropriately. And then I went on to find out that the review team estimated rating specialists erroneously established re-examination controls in about 66% of cases. So I went, wait a second. In 2000 and what was that?
18, right?
18. They said it was 37%. Now they're saying it's 66%. So in 5 to 6 years, it's doubled.
Oh my word.
So it... just look at the money. Go to Office of Inspector General report, read these reports and follow the money. The purpose of me mentioning this is find the knowledge that you need to be prepared for what it is you're about to embark on. And if it gives you a hard time, please go guard your shells with the armor of God, the shield and the sword, and get out there and make sure that you have someone in your fighting hole who's ready to go to battle with you. Get a good advocate.
Man, Bill, this pisses me off, actually.
There's a lot of these like this.
You know, the thing is that blows my mind is, and I think about this pretty often, I've been an advocate for 17 years. Technology has advanced, computers, you know, the way that you should be able to track records, the way that things should be handled at doctor appointments. The technology is there for different kinds of surgeries, different kinds of treatment programs, and you see civilian hospitals, civilian doctors being ran so much more efficiently. And for me, I understand that the VA is a big beast, right? We talked about there's good people, there's people who are not so good in the system leading the way. But the thing is, in today's day and age, what the hell is going on where it's such a big deal to take care of our veterans? And what I, if you can't tell, I get really passionate about this because I've spent so much of my personal time trying to fight this beast that should be here to help you all.
Yeah. You know, it's a multifaceted issue. You know, I'll tell you that these numbers are alarming. The amount of money that is being spent on this is alarming. You know, one report in here estimated that if these continue, that would be around $100.6 million of wasted funds. So we know that it did continue because those percentages have increased. You know, you have the most recent article that came out about the FAA revoking over 60 pilot licenses due to their work with the VA. I can tell you that some of those pilots are some of the most peaceful people that I know and I've worked with, and that is their therapy because that's what they were born into and they always wanted to fly. Mm-hmm. But yet the VA is revoking their only method of therapy, and those are in some cases, but not all. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that I have found that the VA, and I really want to be clear, like, I'm not trying to crucify mm-hmm. the individuals who are working in the VA. I work with tons of decision review officers mm-hmm. who are going, Bill, I see this. I know. I really hate these exams too. I mean, majority of our informal conferences, decision review officers are going, I'm sorry. I see it also. The problem is we know that there is a leaky, I don't even know if it's a faucet. I think it's like a
fire hydrant.
Yeah, it's like a devastating crack in the dam. And I don't see anyone on Capitol Hill who cares or is doing anything about it. I've spoken to representatives. I've had representatives submit congressionals to the VA and nothing happens to them. I mean, I typically tell people a congressional is no different than when you run out of TP in the bathroom, just grab those papers and use it. The VA doesn't respond to them in a very proper or quick way. They look at people who are getting advocates like myself and they take an adversarial approach saying, why'd you get an attorney? And I'm going, well, because they have a right to. I mean, that's why that's why we fought in the Revolutionary War, is because we got tired of people getting tossed up into the Tower of London with no representation. So it bothers me because it is a beautiful, beautiful regulation designed to promote care for the people who give us this great nation. And we see that there is tremendous issues within, but I can't seem to find anybody who really wants to do anything about it. I mean, look at our most recent political debates with the people who are going to be in the caucuses. When are they discussing these numbers? You know, why is the VA attacking us, the veterans, to save money? You know, why are we taking care of just like we do in our nonprofit? Why would I take money out of my broken and busted backyard and go across the pond and take care of somebody else's backyard when I can't even figure out how to deal with my own problems? And I can't wrap my head around it. So what I can tell you, Miss Patty, is there's a void and there's not enough people filling it. So my team and I have chose to try to fill it.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate it. And I know that some of you listening, you work for the VA. I know I have talked with many of you over the years. I've, you know, I've worked with countless people who do care in the VA. But that said, you know, it's like beating a dead horse every single year. You know, it's more issues. It's like more complexity. I don't know. It's
complacency.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. And the thing is, you know, we just shouldn't have to be dealing with this. I mean, this is a whole nother ball game, right? But I mean, our government's spending tons and tons of money sending it over to other countries to take care of other people. And our veterans, the core, the backbone of our country, needs our help right now. And so if you're listening and you're maybe the director of the VA, I know people at the VA on a high level have listened to my show and complimented it before. I want you to know, first of all, I'm not on here, and neither is Bill, to throw anybody under the bus. It's that we're tired. I think good words for me would be I'm tired. Tired of fighting, Are you waiting for me to die so that nobody behind me is going to fight? Because there's starting to be more of a lack of people who are fighting for our veterans. The wars have fizzled out compared to, 10 years ago. The accountability is not there. Like, what are you waiting for to make a change? And what is your legacy going to be? Because at the end of the day, if you know that the VA is broken and that VA or veterans are struggling, I don't know how you're resting your head on your pillow at night until it's fixed.
You know, it's another thing that I think we miss also as a society. And I remember trying to promote this idea back in 2014 and continuing to promote it today is, I honestly believe that one of America's greatest resource is just completely, like, we've missed it. So when I look at the American veteran and I look at the history of what they've done, I'm going, wow, these are some incredible feats against all odds of adversity. And still we came to the top and we did it in an honorable way. But you know what the worst thing is when veterans discharge, they literally become disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. Like, we have created an incredible human resource. Mm-hmm. People who can link up with all sorts of shapes and different people of life, other humans that, come from incredible backgrounds and focus on creating a team to accomplish insurmountable tasks. And they do that for their contract. And then when they leave, I always said that there was always one common thing between veterans. Every veteran has the same thing. And every veteran, for the most part, the same commonality, no matter where they're from, the only thing that they ever wanted to do that was the same thing when they were in service, was they always wanted to go home. Mm-hmm. Wherever home was, whatever home is to them, they always wanted to go back home. But when they go back home and they leave, we disenfranchise. We isolate. We become these individuals lost in the sauce. I mean, I think the census said there was around 337 million people plus or minus last year, and 16.4 million make up veterans, which is just under 7% of the population. So I can understand why politicians sometimes don't necessarily care, because, well, our vote is meaningless to them. But the other portion too, though, is imagine, just like we should do with our kids, if we should invest back in to one of the greatest human resources that this country has ever built. And it's those youths. I could say it from my cousin Vinny, them youths, the female and the male youths that accomplish incredible things together. Now, take those 22, 23, 24-year-olds, repurpose their minds, give them something, connect them together. Who knows? Maybe that's what the politicians are scared of. But I think they're beautiful people. And when you see these veterans working together, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I wish we could have more of it.
It is. How, if a veteran's listening right now and they want to get a hold of you, how should they do that?
Yeah. So my office is called Veterans Affairs Law. Our phone number is 941-552-6677, 941-552-6677. If you just Google us, Veterans Affairs Law, Sarasota, Florida, you'll find us, you'll see our team. We all are veterans, and we pride ourselves on that. And it makes it a lot easier to understand the records that we're looking at and to hear the stories, to kind of read between the lines, I think, is the true value of understanding that history. But yeah, please give us a call. I can tell you that I do consultations all the time. We have another attorney who's a veteran as well. He does consultations all the time. And we're just going to give you information. We get a lot of people that call and say, well, I want to do A, B, and C. And it's like, all right, here's how you do it. And then they go do it. Sometimes they hit a brick wall. They call back, need help. But the idea of us is no different than when you're at the smoke pit and somebody runs out because they got the good scuttlebutt from the lieutenant because they heard it while they were passing through, the command hooch. And they come over and they go, boys, I just heard LT said A, B, and C. Our job is to pass that good word. That's what it is. Awareness. I don't want to see any more veterans that were like myself walking around a VA medical center looking, where do I apply for the GI Bill? Because I had no idea what was going on. I'm tired of hearing the stories of veterans going, oh, well, I took TAPS. It was only like 3 days, but I was pretty much hammered most of the time because I knew I was getting out. Just give me my 214, grab my C bag, and I'm out. We get lost. It's a reality. Adults get lost. Young men and women coming out of the military are going to get lost. Our job is to pass that word.
That's amazing. Not to mention, if and like I had mentioned earlier, if you do work at the VA, and maybe you're a doctor there, maybe you're a director there, maybe you know, you are a nurse there, whatever. Wherever you're working at in the VA, if you see problems too, it's okay to be the whistleblower, and it's important. I know a doctor who actually I had an interaction with last year, and he said that he was going to quit working at the VA because he felt like his hands are tied. And there have been a lot of good doctors who quit because their hands have been tied. But instead of quitting, I really, really encourage you all to just start speaking up. When you see something wrong, you know, try to get it fixed. Stand up for our veterans.
Amen. Live life to its fullest. Enjoy it.
Yep, definitely. So on that note, thank you all very much for listening. Again, if you did not hear Bill's first part of his story, go back to last week's episode and listen. And all you veterans out there, you are not alone. Contact Bill, and he'll hook you up.